Alex Newton, the chiropractor, is here as well now. Hello.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Got to ask, have any spooky experiences? Ever thought
heard
a ghost?
No. Stay away from those things. They're horrible.
Okay.
No, I'm easily scared, as my husband will tell you. You know, don't go anywhere near those.
Spooky tale at Christmas, if you're at the local pub and there's a storytelling evening, would you settle down to...
No, probably not. I don't like horror movies and spooky things, no.
But you see, ghosts and horror, those are two...
That's quite different,
yeah.
We can encapsulate ghosts and everything like that under what we might call psi, which is what parapsychology is looking at, and that breaks down into your ESP, extrasensory perception, and then psychokinesis, moving objects with the mind or influencing people, and then the other stuff, survival of death. So if you never had anything like that, say, thinking of someone, the telephone rings and you know it's them. Have you ever had that?
Actually, from a chiropractic perspective, if I must say, I often think about a patient and then a couple of days later they'll book in. Now, I wondered whether that was because I'd flicked through the diary and subconsciously seen their name, because I'm trying to be very scientific about it, or they were actually maybe thinking about making an appointment, and since then they have then, and then I find it when they do come in, they'd actually only just made the appointment, so they hadn't. So maybe I am a little bit more in touch with them than I appreciate, perhaps. I don't know.
Let's try you both then, maybe with being in a public place and you feel a little bit uncomfortable, you move about a bit and turn around, and lo and behold, you see someone that was staring in your direction. They could have been staring at the back of your head. Have you ever had that kind of experience?
No, I know what you mean, but no is the short answer. I know people talk about, I could feel their eyes burning
sense
in the back
being
of me.
Stared
I don't really recall ever feeling that.
It was probably me staring at other people, actually.
Well, yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, I'm a bit of a closet starer.
About 70% of people say that they've had those kinds of experiences, so very common. So not just ghosts, they kind of relate to all these other kinds of experiences we might report.
Yeah, I have much weirder things than just feeling like somebody's looking at me. Watching a certain football team on television, the man that took me to my first football games ever, who's sadly dead now, more often than not, it seems to me, I will suddenly think of him, and within 30 seconds of me thinking of him, sometimes immediately, on television, the team score. And it happened last night. It's Crystal Palace, and it happened again last night. Just as Wilf Zaha had the ball, I suddenly thought of this man, and he scored. And I was like, whoa, it's happened again.
Yeah.
But it may be that every time Wilf Zaha gets the ball in the penalty area, I think, he's going to score, because that's the sort of player he is. I don't know.
Synchronicity. I mean, people love cause and effect as well. We like actually getting some sort of sense out of randomness as well. You know, thinking of a person relating to a goal being scored, you know, there's no real logic in relation to anyone else that's watching that match for that actually occurring. It's a personal experience for you. But we like to make sense out of chaos. The brain doesn't really like messiness. It likes order. It likes messiness in the sense of nature and fractals and trees and running water.
So does the brain play tricks with time? Because I'm thinking the actual sequence of events might be Zaha's got the ball in the penalty box, Zaha scores, I think of my Uncle Les. But in that split second, my brain goes, ooh, you thought of your Uncle Les just before he scored then.
Yeah, and so that could be part of your memory recall and what we call confirmation bias as well, where, again, we've still got this wrong association between one thing and another, but how good is your recall to that event whenever this comes up? And now it's a repeated thing for you because you've said this isn't just the one-off.
So it's
kind of stuck there as something to remember in that way? All three of us could probably tell the story of Little Red Riding Hood, but all of us are going to tell it in a slightly different way based on how we've remembered it as well. It just gets stuck there with how best we can remember certain events and what actually occurs within them.
And the other thing I have, and we'll keep Alex in the loop here, throw in any experiences you've got similar to this, faces in clouds. Particularly nighttime, if you get good clouds blowing through and a good moonlit night and the lights from the moon's illuminating the clouds and they're all shade and light and three-dimensional. You look at those for a few seconds, suddenly there are faces of people you used to know writ large in the sky. I've had that.
Yeah, I love cloud gazing, especially in the daytime. People say, oh, look, it looks like a racing car or a bunny rabbit. It does. I'm sure it really does when you're trying to find what it really is.
It's actually a really good likeness. That's the weirdness that I see sometimes in the clouds.
And we're trying to find some order in something that's random. The cloud formation is completely random, and we call this pareidolia. We can have it visually. We have it a lot, especially with rock formations, the brickwork, woodwork in a building, and we see some sort of creepy face there. But again, we are picking out what the brain most relates to, and that's the human face, the human form. It's probably why people misinterpret seeing figures in the darkness as well, when we can't really judge distance in that allegedly haunted property at night time and our mind is running wild and we're starting to try and pick out a face. But you can get it in an auditory sense as well, which is why we have this phenomena called electronic voice phenomena, when people think they're recording voices of the dead and all they're hearing really is, oh, did you hear Chris then? Did you hear Chris? And then group conformity takes over. Everyone else thinks that they've heard Chris because someone suggested it. So that random noise starts to form a better phrase of Chris. You hear it a little bit better.
He's good at that.
Yeah, I know. The static.
That's scary. Is it fair to suggest that the world that Alex moves in is also, in a sense, partly based on a belief and a faith? Is chiropractic simply skills that you have, or is there a belief involved in it as well?
Well, there's
say,
a degree. We class it as an art, a philosophy, an art, and obviously there's skill involved in there. But certainly, when experiments have been conducted and research has been conducted, there's that extra energy somewhere within. And some colleagues of mine were conducting some examination and potential treatment on some infants, some young children in the chiropractic college, and they found that the results were quite bizarre with children that actually weren't being treated. So they had a non-treatment group and a treatment group, but the infants were exposed to the same sort of atmosphere or environment, and the interns, if you like, because it was done with students, were pretending to treat and look after the children, but not actually doing anything. So there was just a hands-on contact. Yeah. So, and then they found that those children were actually responding anyway. So there was that sort of degree of energy within that they call it intent. That, you know, that because the chiropractor had a positive attitude towards healing, then the child would heal anyway, just by being in the, or improve just by being in the room. So then they had to reconduct that experiment by then actually although the chiropractor was in the room, there had to be a shield, so the chiropractor didn't even look at the baby, so that there was absolutely no way that there was that positive sort of encouragement, or didn't touch the baby. But the parent then still didn't know whether the baby had been treated with chiropractic care or not. So there was a sort of a bit of a double blind scenario there, and they found that that actually worked slightly better. So that you obviously get, as time goes on, everybody responds and improves to a degree. So they had to prove that it was the chiropractic treatment that was actually making a change to these crying infants, rather than time itself. So the only way they could do that was actually, although they were still in the same room, they had to put a shield through there to stop that energy and passing through to the child. So there's definitely, from that, we know that there's an intent. People actually making that decision to come and have chiropractic treatment, they suddenly actually feel better. Often it's like going to the dentist, isn't it? Oh, I made my appointment with the dentist and all of a sudden my tooth feels better. It's that positive energy within yourself. You're taking control and actually go. And often people will come to see us and say, well, I was awful when I rang in, and since I've made that appointment, my symptoms have improved. So it's actually I'm actually quite well now, and you know, what do you recommend? And we often go on and check and say, well, you know, although you're feeling better, it may be that your body has adapted. So it's a sort of a physiological change there, rather than a spiritual change. And then we go on and help them understand what was wrong and why, and then take their course of treatment forward from there to hopefully stop them, reduce the risk of relapse there. So that's from a scientific point of view in chiropractic. Maybe that we do have this intent, which is maybe a paraphysiological experience.
Yeah, I think faith healing might be an interesting area.
Absolutely. I mean, I can relate to what you're saying with
As I dismiss everything that Alex has just said with the phrase faith healing,
we're
and I didn't mean to do that, you know what I mean.
We get it with the experimenter effect. So I mentioned the telephone telepathy studies when Rupert Sheldrake has carried these out and is very positive about finding something there. They've been replicated by Professor Chris French at Goldsmiths University, who's a notorious sceptic, and largely his results haven't really found anything, but Rupert's have been phenomenal. But is it down to how the participants feel and know about the experimenter as well? It doesn't really matter sometimes even about the rapport that they create with the people they're working with. It's knowing about how they feel generally about the phenomena and what they're investigating. So for Chris, it's more so, I don't think anything's going on. I think there's loads of conventional explanations. And for Rupert, it's saying, you know, this seems seems like quite a legitimate phenomenon. When we control it and test it, it seems to be there. And yet repeated trials with him seem to be quite positive, and for Chris, they haven't gone so well. So you can get it not just in healing and healthcare, but you can also get it in some of these experiments as well.
I think there's plenty more to be talking to you about into the new year, Cal Cooper. If you would come back, it would be lovely to see you again.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to go into the placebo effect there, but there's so much more to discuss, yeah, so absolutely.
Exactly, but we feel as though there's a 3 o'clock news bulletin about to happen, so I shall have to say farewell for now.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you
for having me, you too.
We'll have Alex Newton in full effect after the news.